kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Weird episode today. Party cast, but no Cole, no Chris, but we got Pernell, we got Tim, and we got Aki.
So yeah, we can actually have fun. The adults are gone.
The adults are gone.
Yeah, they're never here.
No.
Yes, this is the catastrophic effect that unseasonal weather...
Yeah, climate change is wrought upon the podcast. Climate
change is wrought upon the podcast, yeah.
Cole dealt with an ice storm and has no power, apparently since Saturday.
I dealt with that same storm. Thankfully, I do have power. Oof. I lose my mind.
Is it the same storefront that's hitting where Chris is at, too, or are they two different storm patterns?
I think they're two different ones. I don't know, because Kentucky to Texas, who knows?
Kentucky, Texas.
Yeah, because on one hand, it's like that's quite a distance. But on the other hand, I've been seeing some of these like patterns that people will display online, like, you know, like weather forecasts in different areas. And they're like, it's just like a giant black, dark blue blob just coating the United States.
And apparently there's another fucking one coming, too, which is just like the most fun. Like,
yeah, our forecast for Thursday says rain with a chance of 6 to 10 inches of snow.
that's the wacky part.
You don't get rain at that fucking point. Jesus Christ.
I guess it makes it, in a sense it almost could. If they can't gauge the temperature within that 5-degree window, that really is the difference. Like if it drops to 30 degrees, you're getting snow. If it's 35 degrees, you're probably getting some rain. And you better hope it's 35 degrees because shit. But again,
yeah, I'd really rather have rain right now than snow. I mean, I like the snow. This is the first time it's actually really, really snowed at my house since I was in, like, middle school, maybe.
Wait, what? Where are you at? Did it snow that long?
No, this is the first time it's snowed like this since then. Usually we get, like, next to no snow. It's very little. It's constant, but we don't get very much usually. Mm. This time, like, I looked outside on fucking... Well, hell, no. Monday night is when it hit real hard here, and fucking at 10 p.m., it still looked like it was, like, later in the afternoon, because the light from just a couple streetlights, the snow was so vast. It reflected so much, it looked like it was still later in the afternoon instead of nighttime. And it lasted until morning, and that's why I didn't sleep. Was because of that. Because it was still so fucking bright and no one was driving, no dogs were being taken out, no people walking. Like, I'm used to there being noise until like 3 o'clock in the morning. Not a lot, but, you know, stuff. Nothing from like 4 p.m. the entire day. I heard like maybe 10 cars drive by from.
And where are you at?
Indiana.
And like Tim up in Buffalo is like, you fucking pansies.
Hey, we have the infrastructure that we are prepared for this kind of situation.
There it is. I was hoping you'd say something like that. Yeah, because I noticed a lot of like people joking about that and like mocking Texas right now about it. And of course, every once in a while, it's almost like to try to slap some politics in there because why the fuck not?
No. But it's really, like, they don't have snow plows. I had three go down my street last night.
Yeah, like, and it costs a lot to even have that stuff. So if that's not even worked into their budget, it's not a simple matter. It's like, hey, can we just borrow a snowplow? We need it in like 40 hours, but ripe with snow. Just
borrow one snowplow for the whole state of Texas.
Can we just borrow your one snow, your one plow? We'll bring it back, you know. Yeah, sure, no problem, man. Just make sure to put gas in it first.
Fill it up before you bring it back.
You can't really even borrow one because... If you need one, chances are the places where you're borrowing it from, since they're right fucking next to you, they probably need it too. It's like, that doesn't work.
Oh, for sure. It's like, and that's the sad reality. It's like, there's short of Lil Messi, like, taking steps into the idea, like, this is what we're going to be getting now. Climate change is fucking shit up. Like, they're not, they're going to have to work into a budget somehow. And that takes time and resources. And unfortunately, folks that make the decisions aren't looking at it like that. They're not perceiving that direction, which is unfortunate because the people who lose the vote have to suffer for it, is what it boils down to. So, well, everyone suffers, but the people who lost the vote ultimately, hopefully, were trying to not have to get to this point of the situation. But with that said, it might just be me, but this is one of those times where, like, I honestly can't really get, like, I can't feel jovial or anything about it for in any case. It's like, it's just bad all around. Like, no one wants to deal with that. I don't want to hear about anybody, like, sitting in a house with no heat and it's like -5 degrees.
I've gone nights without heat during the winter in Pennsylvania, and they're not fun.
They're not fun. We were talking.
When we first got together as X-Strike and moved into an apartment together, we didn't really turn on the heat at all because we couldn't afford it. Because a lot of apartments in Western New York that are like colonial style houses that are converted into split level, like one apartment up, one apartment down sort of situations are very poorly insulated. Mm. So you're just paying hundreds of dollars for heat to just fly out the fucking windows. So it was very cold in that apartment all the time. Like, literally could see my breath when I woke up in the morning. Like, but you know, I just stayed in a sleeping bag all day.
My crazy neighbors use those little tiny room heaters that you plug in to the wall because their furnace was broken for most of the time they've lived in that house, and they don't trust the repairs that were done on it by the guy they're renting from. He is such a fucking putz.
Damn, right? That's the sad part about it. Like, they're renting the place. They're clearly paying for the space, but they still don't have enough faith in the guy renting them the property.
Oh, yeah, that dude's a slumlord, as far as I'm concerned. That place is a fucking wreck. Like, it has cracks in its foundation all over the fucking place. There's a giant hole in the laundry room that was there before they moved in. He put a tiny piece of plywood over it.
Oh, like the gate type? It's, like, that deep?
Like, it's big enough. My neighbors are really, really big. Like, they're bigger than Joe big. And they could fall through that hole. It's so fucking large. And
Jesus.
And it was there before they moved in, because the last neighbors that were there back when I first got my house, that hole was there for them, and they complained about it to him. All he did was put the tiniest, thinnest piece of shitty plywood over it, and it obviously it broke not long into the neighbors moving in. He took off the gutters to replace them, and then he left the brand new gutters in the fucking yard just sitting there for 2 or 3 fucking years before I think he finally put them on.
Years?
Yes. He just left them sitting in the fucking yard that entire time, not being covered by anything.
That's where you just stop paying your rent and wait for them to go through the hassle of evicting you. That's some bullshit.
I honestly, I'm not even sure that he actually put them up. I know he did work on the roof, so I assume he put them up. They might actually still be fucking sitting there.
He just took a staple gun, like, there.
Just duct tape it up.
Well, hell, my old neighbors, they didn't have a back door. They actually made their own fucking back door out of chicken wire and wood. Because he wouldn't put a fucking back door on the goddamn thing.
How do you guys just not have a fucking tenants? Back door?
I have no idea, but something about it, a part of it broke or something, and like a panel in it or something like that broke, and they had to replace the entire door.
Like I would be out of, like, I mean, is real estate hard to come by? Is it the affordability? Is it just the general sense of not wanting to move your stuff out of a house, which I honestly understand?
Well, the area where I live is lots of government support housing and stuff like that. So it's for fairly poor people, basically, is my little neighborhood. So once people move into that place, it's very hard for them to get the money to move the fuck out.
So he's pretty much got him. He's got him by the balls, because essentially the work to get out is not likely to be doable.
Yeah, exactly. My neighbors, the first set of neighbors lived there for like 10 fucking years with that fucking issue, all those fucking issues. And the dude just doesn't fix anything. And my current neighbors have lived there for 4 or 5 years, something like that. And they just haven't been able to get together all the money to fucking move. The worst part is when they first moved in there, one of the husband of that family, his father lived with them, and he was like confined to a bed. They had to take care of him, like the whole works. And there was no fucking heating in winter. I would have flipped my shit if I were them.
That sounds like a really shitty landlord.
Yeah, he's a slumlord, 100%. And once they move out, they actually have lots of this stuff, just them asking him to fix stuff and how long it fucking takes for him to actually get to it if he ever does. I'm going to have them give me all that information. I'm just going to bring it to the city and have him have the fucking property taken from him.
Oh, Rando says this game sounds weird.
It's like, I don't care if he likes me. I may have met him once. Like, I don't know. He can hate me. Fuck him.
Slumlord Simulator.
Yeah, shit.
The world where people take advantage of people because, man, they're pieces of shit.
Yeah. Once the city takes his property away, I'll just buy it for like a couple $1,000 and just tear the fucker down and just have extra yard.
I was about to say, be careful. You don't want to become that which you hate. He's like, yeah, I didn't like it at first, but now I'm banking on it.
No, God, no. I'll tear it down. I've torn down a house before. My parents, their old single-handedly. House, they had
just rolled up. And was like,
I probably actually could do it single-handedly. Honestly, my parents bought this like 2-story, maybe 3-story house that was next door to them. Their old house. It was dilapidated. It was falling apart. It was a danger, is what it fucking was.
Dilapidated. And I like that word.
Yeah,
it reminds me of a boat.
Very specific boat.
Yeah, me and my stepdad, we tore that house down together, mostly because he made me help him. I did not want to do it. I was in high school at that point. I was not for tearing down a fucking house, but he was like, "Well, you're going to help me anyways," and I was like, "Okay."
But tear his house down. Do it. Take the sledgehammer. Beat this house up.
I like how you had an actual slumlord. We had one landlord that my mom would always say, oh, she's a slumlord. She rents to all the low class people and she just rents to the terrible people. And she was the only one who would give us a chance because we had like 3 cats at the time. Yes, there was a time we only had 3 cats.
You kept up in the ante.
Well, we left there with like 5. So yeah, we did keep up in the ante. But, she was the best landlord we ever had. She would take care of stuff when we needed. When we moved out, Piddles was going into heat when we were living there, and we didn't want her getting pregnant, so we locked her up in a room while we had to go out the one day, and she just dug a hole in the carpet. And our landlord kept $50 to fix that, and that's it.
Oh, wow. That was really nice.
Yeah, because she could have stolen flimsy. You got to do a whole carpet.
Meanwhile, we had lawyer landlords who were massive pricks and kept our entire deposit, because allegedly when we re-upped our lease, we were told we weren't on a contract after the first year, and they said we were on a contract and we broke the contract and they weren't giving us any money back.
Oh, that's how they fuck you over.
Yeah.
You always take that to small claims, because them fuckers.
They were the lawyers, so we weren't. We were just like, fuck them. Life lesson.
One time, and I beat that shit, and to this day I'm proud of that crap, because they were like, hey, oh yeah, you're fine. If you need to leave or anytime before your lease is up, you just got to pay like a month or 2 penalty, no big deal. And I was like, okay, cool. So I ended up getting a house, And I was like, okay, well, I ended up finding a good deal on the house, so I'm going to move out now. And LA was like, okay, I'm just going to take 7 months rent from you, and you got to pay it before you move out. I'm like, well, I can't do that. And you told me the house was okay to leave. She's like, well, I didn't say that. That isn't what it is. Look at your lease, blah, blah, blah. Which she was right. My lease was a lease. But when you ask them to lay it down for you, they're supposed to tell you the fucking truth. And she lied to me, literally lied to me. So,
well, on top of that, if it's not specifically written, I would never fucking trust anything they say unless it's exactly what was written, because they can always say one thing, and then once you do what was agreed upon, they'll just fucking change it because they can get away with it because they didn't write that shit down. You don't have any evidence that they said what they said. People screw each other over with that shit all the time. That's some bullshit.
And the one random time in my life where something like this actually played out in a positive way, that I ended up screwing her over in the long run, so it balanced out, because I did take the document, the lease document. It was like a 20-page document. I read the whole damn thing, and there were like 6 ways that you could get out of the lease that would not result in that freaking, like, what would literally be like an $8,000 penalty. And the one that I found that I could make work in some weird way was I'd have to get a transfer in my current job. So I couldn't get a new job. Had to be my current job. Had to transfer me 60 miles away from home to break the lease.
Wow.
So I got my job to transfer me 60 miles away for a month. So I came back in there and said, fuck you, you're going to get 2 months without me. You ain't getting shit now. Later, walk right the hell up. Like, here's the letter. You can't contest it because it's an official transfer. That was the most important part. They didn't lie. I actually said, can you transfer me to that location? I'll come to work on time every day. I just need to be somewhere else. And they said, go for it. The gun.
For a month.
For a month. It was a lot of driving. It was literally 60 miles each way for a month.
Jeez.
But you know what happened? A lot of podcasts. A lot of just relaxing drives. It was actually not even bad. I made that shit work. And the best part was, like, I still go by that apartment once. So I just kind of smiled. I made something happen. I pulled that shit off. Because I felt bad. I was like, yeah, you're kidding me. I'm going to give $8,000. I don't just have $8,000 to be given somebody for being a dick. But, yeah, she got nothing. And it took her a while to even rent my damn place out. So it was also multiple months of no income coming in. And if it was a person I gave a shit about, I'd have felt bad. But fuck her.
Good, fuck him.
Yeah, that's right. It felt fucking good. Stick it to the man for once. Like, just do it.
You said you mentioned listening to a lot of podcasts. That reminds us that we have a podcast to do. Should we dive into some games to talk about?
I thought this was the Slumlord Podcast.
It is the Slumlord Podcast, and we have 6 Slumlords to talk about. And the first Slumlord is called Fallen Legion's Revenants.
this slum, you control a real jerk.
In this Slumlord video game, now we do have games to talk about. We got to dive into these. Is everyone ready?
Yes, if I must be.
All right, first game to talk about is called Fallen Legion Revenants, developed by Yummy Yummy Tummy Incorporated, published by NIS America, released February 16th on Switch and PS4 for $39.99. The world is covered in miasma. The remnants of mankind have taken refuge in a floating castle ruled by a madman. Swap between the charismatic politician Lucian and the vengeful ghost Rowena, and make political maneuverings in the castle above as you fight off monsters in the wasteland below. Purnell, tell us about Fallen Legion Revenants.
So this game, let me see if I can start on this in an interesting way. So
games are so fucking weird. Jesus Christ. Go on.
Pretty much. Honestly, I like weird games. The problem is with something like this one, like, it's the way it happens. So the game just kind of throws you into this atmosphere where you are literally in this castle. It's already established. There's no like real back narrative established. It's just like, hey, you're in this castle now. And you're talking to the guy who runs the facility, which is called Welkin, and the guy that runs his name, Ivor. And he's already got a chip on his shoulder about the character Lucian, who's one of the two main characters in the game. And for the most part, Lucian's role is to potentially overthrow this guy and get him either ejected or just maybe even killed because he's a piece of crap, corrupt lord of Welkin. But then his companion and assistant is someone named Rowena, who is a ghost who used to work in the castle, but was kind of killed off by Ivor unceremoniously. And her spirit was so angry about the fact that it happened and that she had a son in the castle she wanted to take care of still, that she remained around as a vengeful ghost, which is why she's still there. Now, her role in the game is to work on the surface with something, what ghosts called Exemplar, to fight battles and wage wars. The overall goal is to get him ejected from the castle. They're working together to do that, but the way they're doing it in the narrative, it just doesn't flow right. Like, it just, things just happen. So, like, the best way to describe it is just to go into the actual gameplay, and then from there I'll kind of slap in how the narrative fills that gap in. So, think of the combat, which is one of the elements of the game, Rowena's half. It's all combat. It's almost as if someone said, you know, I've been playing a lot of role-playing games over my years, and I really would like it if I could just parse it down to the bare minimum. Like, no world map, no exploration, no shopping, none of the stuff that people generally expect with a JRPG. So in this game, you get the combat consisting of Rowena and up to three Exemplar running from left to right. And every once in a while, they'll come across enemies on the field. And they're all lined up in a series of four squares going from left to right. And as battle commences, you have a face button that exists for each of the Exemplar in your battle party. And as long as they have enough AP, max of three, they can do an attack. And they'll attack the person at the most at the forefront of the party, unless you have the aim ability set up. And then a distance attacker can fight somebody in the back based on what you select. But otherwise, you're fighting the guy in the front. You're just mashing the buttons, getting the attacks off. Every once in a while, an opponent will try to attack you. And when they do, you can hit the left trigger to bring up a block. And if you pull it off well, you'll not take damage. But if you pull it off really well, you'll deflect the damage back and do damage to the enemy. Now, in addition to the actual characters fighting, Rowena can also assist by using magic spells. As attacks land, you'll fill a gauge. Every time the gauge fills up, you get one orb, and that orb can be used by Rowena to cast a spell, one of three spells she can equip, or one of the Exemplar to fulfill an attack known as a Death Blow, which is like a more powerful move that can sometimes back and forth or have elemental attributes. Now, may sound kind of familiar. Played a game called Valkyrie Profile back in the day, and you'd be hammering. Whereas early on, the combat in this game seemed kind of cool. The problem is, it a general aspect from Valkyrie Profile, which is just, you know, three characters assigned to a button to do damage, or rather four characters assigned to a button to do damage. But they forgot some of the other elements that made that combat more engaging, such as combat not being like one after another immediately. The fact that you had three different attacks, you had to assign the characters, and then you had to have the cool combos of like juggling enemies and getting orbs and crystals or what have you. And of course, the death blows were things you had to charge up through doing successful combos. Whereas in this game, it's not really so much strategy as you're just kind of mashing the buttons together. Yeah, some of the attacks can have elemental properties and all, but for the most part, you really are just wailing on those buttons, trying to nail some damage and getting the block roll just to survive as long as you can. It wasn't particularly exciting. It worked. It was functional, but it didn't really draw me in.
No.
Now, during the other part of the game, there's another segment of the game, and that is the section for Lucian. What Lucian's section is every once in a while during the battle sequences, the game will kind of parse off to the side, and it'll do a split screen, and it'll switch to him. And he'll be up in the castle dealing political nonsense. It might be another resident of the castle saying something like, hey, we need to pass this bill for some reason in the castle, like rations for sick people. I don't want to give rations to sick people. They should just die. And at that point, it's like, okay, well, this is the vote. I need to get other people in the castle to agree to this vote or disagree to this vote, depending on how I personally feel about it. So you're running between the room that you're in. It's usually one room with like three or four people in it. And you're answering questions and deliberating to get responses from them to ultimately go back to the guy and say, I want to have this vote. Let's just knock it out. And it's usually time, like a 30-second thing. And if you don't pull it off in time, you know, it can just have consequences. Fortunately, I've never failed at one of those votes. I just, even if it got to the point where I didn't talk to anybody, I just ran up and just get like a mock. Was like, just do it. Just do it. So you just
better fucking vote for me or else.
Just do the damn vote. other times you might have a situation where you might want to find information on like a weapon or on a location that Rowena might be going to. So you might run around like a library and look for some books. And if you can find the right book that has the information, you can tell Rowena, hey, go to the such and such locale. This is where you want to be. Of course, later on, Rowena might come back and talk to you and then say, I don't trust you. You can just say, I don't trust it. You just found anyway. I'm going to the other place, which I'm not sure if that's a story thing where not trusting Lucien with the information makes them have a bad relationship, or if it's just the game's way of saying, hey, I know you kind of chose the previous location under duress. This is your chance to change your mind. I just went with my original gut every time. I was like, just take the damn call. Just do it. Now, Lucien's sections can be a little annoying because of the sense that he only really has four rooms to run around. Because remember how I mentioned before how they kind of just cut out a lot of the meat and potatoes of what generally happens in JRPGs, yeah. Like talent exploration. Well, this game is literally four rooms you go to. There's like a warehouse, a library, a main hall, and like one other place that I can't off the top of my head recall, chapel. And each of those areas may have a few people in it. Aside from talking to people, the other things you really do in those locales, unless you're on a mission to like say stealthily get from one half of the room to the other, it's you can go to one person in the game, usually in the warehouse, to equip your exemplars with like equipable buffs that you can unlock by performing masteries. Like masteries being, I guess, like additional attacks they can get. These attacks coming in the form of like by doing things like, I don't know, like blocking 75 times or using 200 elemental strikes. Basically just side missions that every character gets. If you fulfill the side mission, you'll unlock this like mastery skill. And if you unlock enough mastery skills, you'll unlock slots for equipping these buffs. That's something you can do in the warehouse. And the other location where you're just primarily of importance is there's a woman in the library where every once in a while Rowena's doing adventures, she might find weapons or armor on the ground. If she finds these things, not only can they be equipped on the exemplars to give them like, you know, like potentially new attacks or just stat buffs, but sometimes this woman can take the weapons and pull new exemplars out of them, which allows you to get new party members to use out in the field. Now, party members don't level up or anything. They only improve by way of either equipping them with stuff like with the buffs or the gear you find, or like I mentioned before, fulfilling the mastery conditions to unlock their extra moves and whatnot. So the game loop literally becomes do a left to right run. Every once in a while, you'll get a side mission in the middle where you have to fulfill an obligation with Lucien in the castle. Then go back to the castle, save your game, or unlock some stuff. Then go back, talk to Rowena, and do it again. Wash, rinse, repeat. And yes, there are boss fights. And yes, there are enemies and all. And there's like some interesting elements, like enemies that can like poison tiles you're on. So you have to move to the right tile to avoid the damage if you want to. Or if you place the healing tile, you got to move to the healing tile to get healed for your party. But overall, my issue with the game was just that the loop got old very fast, and I wasn't invested enough in the narrative to want to see it through on that either. Now, keep in mind, this is an opinion. This is a review of an opinion. The game itself functions well. I sometimes feel like I have to state that when I'm not big on a game. That's the step. But play the game, or like hear everything I'm saying right now and come away thinking that this is a fantastic product. This Purnell guy is full of crack. And that's cool. You're fine to think that.
Full of crack.
I am full of crack. I got a butt crack. I got a nose, two nose cracks. but the thing about it is like, it's one of those cases where it's like, I feel like I want to at least just kind of state it as it is, which is that the game itself is competent. It's just, I feel like it needs more meat on the bone in order to keep me moving. As a person who plays a ton of JRPGs and RPGs in general, I'm not the person in the market for a bare bones, just get it done RPG. I need an RPG that actually has the usual blueprints in place to make me feel engaged. And also just kind of even mosey me more into the plot and not have me just be like, I hate this guy, take him down. But now I got to vote on an arena in the castle. Like, hey, why? I don't give a crap. I don't care about an arena in the castle. Just keep fighting shit. But I want the fights to be more engaging and fun, you know, things. So.
That's something I run into. It's just like, you know, there's so many fucking games out these days. It's like you can't just be okay to really justify the purchase, you know?
Agreed. Like, you'd have to be a very niche market to be like, I want this game that takes all the elements out. Because like on one hand, you got people who are like, say, playing like Persona 5. Persona 5 is a great game. It's also like 150 hours. So somebody would be like, that's too many hours. I can't really put it towards Persona 5. And I guess this is trying to be the other end of the spectrum, which is like, you might beat this game in like 20. Much less time than Persona 5. But then you're like, yeah, but not as engaged in your loop. Persona 5 works because the loop is awesome and the narrative is good. So yeah, you're cool with the 150 if you can put the time in. So give me, if you can put that, get that kind of engagement out of a 20-hour game, you're going to do the job. And it's definitely possible. I know it's possible. But unfortunately, this game didn't quite do that for me.
Well, I got to ask, $40, what do you think of it?
I'd say wait for a sale and then give it a try. But because I don't want to say deny it, because the game functions well enough and it wasn't like a complete snore. It just wasn't engaging enough for me. Definitely not for full price. So get it on a discount and try it then. Or even more so, try the previous game in the series, because that one had a bit more. I like that one a bit more.
Oh, well, they can't all be winners.
No, they can't. But if they were all winners, we wouldn't. If they were all winners, then nothing would be a winner. They would all be the same category.
True. True.
Great.
Next game to talk about is called 30XX, developed and published by Battery Staple Games. Released February 17th on Steam Early Access for $19.99. Jump, shoot, and slash your way through 30XX, the roguelike action platformer you can play with a friend. Explore lush, ever-changing worlds that mix precise platforming with fevered combat. Destroy fearsome guardians, master unique powers, rediscover the thousand years we've lost. Tim, tell us about 30XX.
Man, the thousand years we've lost. My goodness. That's, I don't know if they can get to all those years in Early Access. That's like a lot. So it's an early access game, just dropped in early access. I got to play it for, I don't know, I got the code like a month ago, it feels like, when it was even in even earlier access. That's when, like, I think it literally still said on the screen, like, very early alpha, not even close to done. Just like literally said that up in the corner the entire time. Now it just says alpha in the build version up there. So it's come a little ways since then. So yeah, this is your roguelike formula, or adapted to Mega Man, or contrarily, Mega Man adapted to a roguelike formula. These are the makers of 20XX. Been out for a while. A Mega Man-like sort of deal. So this developer tied that to a roguelike sort of format. Not unlike, it reminds me most of... Like what Dead Cells was done quite well. Like, so kind of have to go out randomly generate and, you know, try in a Mega Man style. Like, I feel like the gameplay and like how your character moves and acts, you know, it's that. I mean, it's Mega Man X. It's, you know, you dash down, you're kind of hopping up the side of the wall. It's like a guy definitely, but not zero. So it has covered.
Is the call breaking up for anyone else, or is there just something funky on my end?
I don't know. Am I breaking up?
It's
happening to me too.
Okay. So the call's just being shitty in general. Thanks, Skype.
How about now? Am I better now?
Seems better now. So okay. I don't know. It's dumb. What were you saying? 30XX?
Should I just start from the top?
Yes.
No, okay. I don't want to edit.
Too bad.
What if nobody can hear it?
Start from the top and just keep all the other stuff in that no one understood. It's fine. Yeah,
that works.
Yeah. Anyway, so quickly, just in case it translates through for some people. Yeah, 30XX. It's a roguelike in Mega Man's clothing, or Mega Man in a roguelike's clothing. It is trying to do this developer made 20XX, which is a Mega Man style game, and this is them taking their shot and putting that formula into a roguelike. It is most reminiscent of like what Dead Cells was doing, and that, you know, it's 2D action platformer, though this you have all your Mega Man X trappings. You dash, you charge shot, you cling to walls, you have a guy who is zero but not zero that you can pick. So there's two different characters, so that's cool. And you can play a co-op, which is also cool. So you go through these randomly generated levels, and they are trying to hit on like a, you know, Mega Man style themes. They put in like it all feels very familiar. It's very, you know, they're not like hiding what they're trying to do, like Mega Man-esque mid bosses. You get to the end of a level and you have a, you know, they're Wah Mavericks there, like animal robots that you beat up, and you can get new weapons along the way. And you'll just find power-ups where it's like, oh, you can boost your life or boost your attack or boost this, burst that. inevitably, you will die fatally. They are smart in that, at least in its current state, it does not permadeath you when you jump into spikes or lava or something that would normally kill you dead in a Mega Man game. It just kind of like respawns you at the nearest platform, which is nice because I don't think the game would work if they just fucking did that. And then, you know, you'll go back to base, and then you can spend some currency on some permanent upgrades, and then try to go further and better and become stronger and make progress that way. The game does have two difficulties. It has permadeath, and then it has like a more casual mode where it retains the like more of the world in progress. So it's a bit less daunting. It's a bit more of a casual roguelike-ish mode, I guess you'd say. It is. Even escaping from its pre-alpha, not even close to done state of a few weeks ago, like they've definitely added stuff to the actual, you know, official alpha early access release on Steam. It still feels a little thin to me at this moment. I mean, there's a lot of competition, you know, in the roguelike space, and there's been some really dynamite ones in the past couple years and very recently in Hades. So it's like, yeah, okay, yes, this feels like Mega Man, but I don't know that it still has a long ways to go. I mean, this is an early access game that literally just dropped.
Yeah, they're saying it could be in early access for at least a year, though. They're gonna take their time with this one and work on it.
Yeah, it still definitely feels like a long way out. I mean, not even just in like kind of obvious like UI senses, but it feels like right now it needs more, what do I want to say, like interest, like the levels need to be jazzed up. Like they feel a little bland at this point. Maybe it's just, they just go on for a bit too long. It's just like, okay, well, it has this tile set. It has these enemies that it throws into it. It has these kind of platform obstacles that it can build into it, but you can only kind of like run through that sort of stuff, like, you know, so many times before it's like, okay, well, you know, when it's not being authored the way that a traditional Mega Man game is, where they build upon concepts throughout a level, and this is just kind of like tossing them out there at you. And a lot of like the incidental like little power-ups, not weapons, but the incidental power-ups feel kind of weak, and there's not very many of them. Like, it just needs more going on in it in its current state, which is fine because that's what the whole early access period is about, is you play through and you get that feedback and you're like, okay, well, add more, tighten, then make a final release. So yeah, that's kind of where it's at right now.
Yeah. Have you played 20XX, or is this your introduction to the franchise?
This is my introduction to what is now a franchise, right? Two games long.
Yep.
So yeah, franchise noob here. So can't comment on what they accomplished before, but yeah,
it sounds like for people who enjoyed 20XX, it's more of the same and more of what people enjoyed out of the first game. I really enjoyed it. I'm excited to see what else they're going to be bringing to 30XX, but at $20 mm-hmm. right now, what do you think of it?
I mean, everybody kind of has their position on early access. I don't think that it's so dynamite in its current state that people should be running out and jumping on it, but some people like to be a part of the process a little bit more.
Is this at least something worth keeping our eyes on?
Of course. Well, yeah, you throw it on the wish list and you keep an eye on it and you take a look at the updates as they roll out, and see where it comes around. Maybe they'll cut a sale on early access. That happens every now and then, but just, you know, watch the game progress. Look at those updates that they push out and see where it's going, but you know, no rush. It's an early access. Some people don't do early access at all. Some people love to dive into those things for years and years. So it's kind of like, you know, you gotta look inside yourself. You gotta go to church. You gotta pray on it.
Look at the early access within.
then figure out whether you want to, yeah, spend $20 on 30XX a year before it comes out to start checking it out now.
All right, sounds good. Well, you got one more game to talk about. That's called Speed Limit, developed by GameChuck, published by Corus Worldwide Games. Released February 16th on PS4, 17th on Steam, 18th on Switch, 19th on Xbox One for $9.99. Speed Limit is a nonstop genre-warping arcade experience that never slows down. No cuts, no lapses in the chaos. Speed Limit is an old-school action extravaganza boiled down to its core elements. Hard, fast, addictive. That's what she said. Tim, tell us about Speed Limit.
She did say that. She was so nice. Yeah, just right off the top, my kid hates this game because I die too much, and he doesn't like games where I die too much, but that's kind of the point, especially the first time through. So, yeah, this is a... The whole deal with this game is that your character starts out, like, on a train, and all of a sudden some guy comes limping through from the next car, drops a gun, falls over, and immediately your guy's like, oh, I have to pick up this gun and start shooting people. So it's like you pick up the gun and, like, you know, all of a sudden, like, agents, cops, you know, FBI, whatever, are after your ass. So you pick up that gun and then you are in the game kicks off. Yeah. With a run and gun shootout on the train, as you're shooting people in the train, shooting people, you know, that are coming up on the roof of the train. You jump up on top of the train, and you're fighting up there. And then you, I believe the next step is you, like, jump off the train onto a motorcycle, and then all of a sudden the game is like a behind the back motorcycle game, like Road Rash, and you're shooting down a road from behind and, like, fighting off guys left and right. And then you're, oh wait, maybe you're in a car first. You are in a car first. That's right. You jump into a car and it's like Spy Hunter, and then you jump onto the motorcycle and you're driving the motorcycle, and then you, like, go off a jump and you jump into somebody's helicopter, and then it's like a helicopter, like, down, like, this aqueduct. So it's almost like a linear, like, Jungle Strike sort of feel. And then you jump into a jet and you're flying through the air, and it's, yeah, like Afterburner, except you see the front of the plane, not the back end. It's kind of weird, but that's the idea of the game, is that you're just shooting forward through these action shooter levels, jumping between different styles, from, like, running on foot to jumping on this vehicle to jumping on that vehicle to jumping on that vehicle, until you get to the end. And all told, I'll tell you right now, the game, if you just sit down and play it from beginning to end, it's like an hour long. It took me, like, on my first try, like an hour and a half. I died hundreds of times along the way, but, you know, it loads you back in quick. Pretty decent with the checkpoints overall. Sometimes it was a little like, come on. yeah, I think at one time I, like, checkpointed, or I got the achievement for finishing the level, but I not actually get the checkpoint for finishing the level, which was interesting.
What?
Yeah. So it's like the achievement trigger popped just before, like, before the checkpoint was in the level somehow.
And then you died.
Yeah. And then I died. Nice. Died between the two, and then I had to keep replaying it, and I was just like, God fucking damn it. But, it's pretty fun. You know, it's meant to be tough. It is meant to be replayed. The game does loop onto itself. So you could, there is an endless mode where literally you can just keep playing Speed Limit over and over again, endlessly. So what you end up with is, and it, like, I should say, like, it's all pretty cool, and all, it all functions and plays pretty well for jumping between different genres. I don't think, like, everything is perfect about it. Like, especially there were some things with the jet level that just, like, boggled my mind. Just did not understand, like, some of the hit detection that was going on there. But for the most part, you know, it's fine. It's good, solid, action stuff. But this game is clearly, like I said, it's like an hour and a half to get through, and the game is, I don't know, more than a dollar to buy. So it's like, this is a game that's targeted at people, I feel like, primarily, that are going to sit down and they're going to want to master it and run through it again and again and again and chase scores and chase times.
Does it have that replayability like that to it?
It could. It might. Yeah. I mean, like, nothing changes. It's just, it's an arcadey thing. So, like I said, I died like a lot on that first playthrough. So I can easily see people being like, okay, well, I'm going to shoot to go through and not die at all, or die very few times, or you're chasing a score. It's score chasing shit. You know, has leaderboards for that purpose.
Are we going to see this at GDQ with someone doing like some insane no death run?
I would have to imagine we will. I think so for certain. Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, that's all there is to it. Like, yeah, there's not much else going on. It's a pretty straightforward piece of game.
Crash Rando says, crazy good game. Some of the achievements are dumb hard, too.
I can fucking imagine. Yeah.
Well, $10 on it. What do you think?
So, yeah, it is worth a buy with the caveat that, like, obviously you already need to be interested in mastering it. If you're looking for a game that you're just going to play through once and put down, you will probably want to wait for a sale. Despite my child's complaints, I had a blast playing through it, you know, one time, the first time. If you're not going to replay it, then wait for a sale. But if you're looking for something to sink your teeth into, I think this could be really cool. Like, yeah, it's not that long. So yeah, if you're looking for something to speed run or get really good at, like, it's not that long again. You can jump. It does have stage select, so you can, you know, practice stages over and over again if you're having trouble with them. So yeah, it's pretty neat.
Cool. All right, well, that is it for you, Tim. We will let you get going so you can get to sleep.
Yeah,
enjoy your snow up in Buffalo.
I will. Yeah, I have to go out and like haul my garbage and recycling bins to the end of the driveway.
Trash which, night for you too.
Yeah, well, the snow banks, I can't. Yeah, so I have to kind of like drag them through the snow or just like pick them up like banks. I'm going to give them a razor's edge onto the road.
How much snow do you have right now?
It's like a foot and a half or so.
Woof.
It's not bad. I mean, this is Buffalo. Like,
touche. It's like the snow is normal up there.
Yeah, it is. Like, I went out and ran errands today because, you know, the roads are plowed. I own a snowblower. So, you know, I have the equipment to quickly remove the snow from my driveway. My road, despite being a tiny little side street, will get plowed. And even then, like, the main road is like four houses away. So, and that's always plowed. Yeah, they plow our roads with construction equipment. They got a front loader that comes down my road every now and then.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Hey, whatever works. Whatever gets the job done.
Yeah, I think the plows just run up the main roads, and then, you know, they send the construction vehicles around the side street. So, yeah, it's well more than what they have in Texas, but, you know, it's Buffalo, so they have the salt, the trucks.
Yeah, Texas is not prepared like Buffalo is for weather like this.
Yeah, I mean, like, a township might have, like, a plow, like, just in case.
Maybe. You know?
It's probably buried in a ruin. They have to solve riddles to unlock it.
Yeah, seriously. They got hotwired the fucking thing to make it work. It's been sitting unused for...
It's down a bunch of corridors, like in Resident Evil, where you have to find a key and... Then you have to find a triangle in someone's desk and walk down the hallway.
Exactly. The mystical snowblower or mystical plow. Like, we never thought we'd have to unleash this beast again.
You have to kill the boss before you get to it.
Yeah. There's a 9 foot tall, big tittied vampire lady with a giant cowboy hat on.
You have Aki's attention.
Yeah. I have everyone's attention.
I've been totally spaced out for so long. What was supposed to catch my attention?
I'm big sorry. Titty vampire.
Big tits.
Oh, what are we talking about now?
Exactly.
You are right. That did catch my attention.
You are right.
Exactly. Are we talking about Code Vein?
No, we're talking about what's her face from Resident Evil 8, except wearing a giant cowboy hat.
She's a bit old for my taste.
Ah.
Talking but about the man, boss of the snowplow in Texas.
I don't care about that. Now I'm thinking about his tall yes.
Oh, God. And, all right, Tim, we're going to let you get going.
Yeah. Sounds wonderful. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any final words before we let you go?
I don't know. Good night.
Good night,
Tim. See you later, man.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Viola, the Heroine's Melody, developed and published by Jelly Van Doom, released out of Steam Early Access on February 17th for $14.99. Viola, the Heroine's Melody is a musical platformer RPG. After failing at violin practice for the 100th time, Viola becomes trapped inside her instrument's fantastical world. Join her adventure to find her way back home, aided by the diverse ensemble of friends she meets along the way. For now, tell us about Viola.
Viola, well, in the previous game I discussed, I mentioned an RPG that decided to chop a lot of the meat and potatoes off of the product in order to give you, I guess, what they believe to be a streamlined experience. I feel like Viola is an example of that concept done well, because in this game, it's fairly linear. When Viola shows up in this alternative world, it ends up, the gameplay consists of you going left to right, sometimes right to left, just depending on the situation, progressing through the environment that you're currently in. And every once in a while, you'll come across a character you need to talk to, or a story event will take place, or a battle will occur. And you can find treasure chests with items in them. You can find items in general, which I'll describe shortly. But for the most part, there's no shops, there's no money to manage, and it has a nice flow and pacing to it. So essentially, she shows up in this world. She comes across a variety of different characters, and the overall goal is a two-folder. One, for her to find a way to, well, three-folder. One, find a way back home. Two, to resolve a problem that the world now is facing that she may have had a part in, though she doesn't know how or why that happened. And three, get over her fear of playing music and hopefully fear of failure as well. So in this weird world that you live in, every character has an instrument, and they all can play their instruments. Hell, to get the save points activated, or not save points, like the, I guess they are technically save points, to get those activated are basically campfires, but you have to play music from your instruments to activate the campfires, and that's a narrative element too. So these are all like the narrative arcs of the game. And as you run around the map, or the world map areas that you go to, you can pretty much run, jump, you can do like a triple jump, a la Mario 64, you know, one jump, two jump, three jump is really high, and there's a bit of a flip. And essentially, that's what you primarily do to get around. There's occasionally like a spring you can jump on to get extra height, or cannons you can launch out of, and other obstacles that exist on the map. But the biggest obstacle, of course, being that it's an RPG, are enemies that you sometimes see on the map. And if you come across one of these guys, you enter a combat sequence where up to five characters, yes, I said five, which is so rare for an RPG, five characters you can control against the opponents. And combat pretty much consists of doing regular attacks, attacks that cost MP for magic, or attacks that cost CP, which you earn by dealing and receiving damage. Now, no matter which of those things you do, you're going to get some sort of rhythm-based like mini game that you have to play to do damage. And it can be a variety of different types of, well, not a variety, just a few things you can get. It might be either timing a button press as it overlaps a bar. It might be mashing a button as fast as you can. It might be holding down a button for an extended period of time. But it's generally some combination of those things that you have to do. The more of them, of course, being related to the stronger the skill you're trying to use. And that's pretty much how you do combat. So similar to a number of games like this, you are not able to space out during combat because you have to fulfill these inputs in order to get your damage off appropriately. Honestly, I found the game to be enjoyable. Like, there's no, that's just what I'm about to mention. There's no equipment in this game. There's no weapons and armor. However, what you can find are gems, either through treasure chests or some enemies will drop them. And when you take these gems, you can equip up to two per character, and they usually are meant to augment your base stats. Typically in the form of a positive and a negative. So there's no, I very rarely came across a gym where it was like, hey, plus four to strength and only that. It's usually plus two to strength, minus one to defense, or plus four to defense, minus two to resistance. So they make you kind of balance it out to say, rather than just like let you buff a character up with a bunch of gems, this gem is meant to let you buff them in an area that they're lacking in, But at the same time, you'll likely be removing a stat from something that you hopefully are already jacked up enough with that you won't miss the difference. So it's about kind of making smart choices of like who you equip with what. And level ups come along as well. I mean, if you do enough damage to kill enough guys, you'll get experience and level up and it'll heal your guys. But for the most part, the game is fairly no frills. I mean, you get more than your fair share of healing items and be a treasure chest. I never really found myself in a situation where I was about to die or was even close to dying. And I honestly enjoyed my play. There's a lot of heart involved. Like the narrative isn't going to win any awards for, you know, best writing or anything. I'm not reading this and thinking, oh man, this is Shakespearean in his own execution. No, but what it is just nice, relaxing dialogue. You know, like characters in the JRPG talking without putting a lot of melodrama on, which is like, oh, I wish I could do this. And the friend goes, sure you can. It's great with friends. You know, it's that kind of stuff. You know, just lighthearted, straightforward, nothing cryptic, nothing overbearing. And it works. It just works. I felt good playing it. And quite frankly, I could see it as a decent recommendation. It comes across as, I guess, a narrative that you would have played like an old NES or SNES role-playing game before everything got, you know, disc-based and they had to write, like, dissertations to get a plot across. So, all in all, I mean, I found this game to be enjoyable. Even the graphics worked out well for me as I saw them in motion. Like, when I saw the screenshots, they didn't really intrigue me all that much. But when I watched the game play, the graphics grew on me, too. I liked those as well. Very colorful and nice.
Well, as it stands, $15. What do you think?
Honestly, I'd say it's a buy. It's a good time.
Cool.
No, it's warm. I got my heat on.
Well, no, it's... Well, yeah, we're on the East Coast. It is kind of warm on the East Coast. It's just the Midwest that's frozen.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I said the developer and publisher was Jelly Van Doom. It's Van Dorn. I saw the RN and I thought it was an M. So... there you go. Next game to talk about is called Puss, developed by Team Coil, published by Samustai, released February 19th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $11.99. In this game, you play as a cat that's trapped in another dimension, find the way out, or stay there forever. Pernell, what the hell is Puss?
Very messed up. This game is fucking weird.
Yeah, we covered this one, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. Royal covered it on the show. We previewed it and then gave it a full review. Now it's coming to console. It's exciting to see it hitting console. I'm excited to hear what you have to think about this one, because this is a fucked up game.
Yes, it is. So the idea is that your cat, who was lying on the couch one day, and the TV starts doing weird shit, and this TV prints help, and I guess this cat is capable of reading human speech. So it just, or human text. So it decides to jump in the TV and it's in this weird world. Gameplay consists, it's basically irritating stick. You are a little cat icon and you will find yourself on a series of stages, individual screen stages, where you need to get from the entrance to the exit. And stopping you from getting to the exit could be any number of weird obstacle concepts. It could be something as simple as just running along a path and not touching the side. It could be blocks are falling from the sky, distorting the pathway, and you have to dodge those blocks and also avoid where the pathway has melted because blocks fell over it. Stuff like that. And even other weird things like TV scan lines are kind of protruding through and just ripping out sections of the stage, and then they get wiped back in. Like it's a very weird game. And what they took something as simple as irritating stick and jazzed it up with a bonkers graphical style. Fun fact, if you are prone to seizures, don't buy this game. You will have a seizure. It's just going to happen. It's going to happen. So if you have seizures or are prone to them, don't buy this game. If you
good to know.
Don't fall into this. It's honestly like. And the thing about it is, like, someone might be thinking, oh, he's probably joking about this. He's just saying it.
No, this is one of those games that, serious. Like, has the seizure warning and wears it proudly.
Yes, like it is a like I'm not prone to them, but I feel like after playing this game, I might be closer to getting one. Like it hit me like that. But dealing with that element, though, I was able to still get enjoyment out of the game, and it just gets so weird because at the first set of levels is just, you know, here's some stages, get through them. But then at the end of those stages, you end up fighting a really bizarre, like, chihuahua boss And it's like a chihuahua boss from hell, because it grows like extra eyes and horns and crap as you're fighting it. And it's not a fight in the traditional sense. What ends up happening is it becomes a bullet hell game where the boss is just blasting bullets like crazy at you. And in addition to dodging the bullets, you'll occasionally see like little POW blocks drop down from the top of the screen. And once you've collected enough of those, the cat will go into like some kind of charged up juice mode, and you have to mash the A button to do damage to the chihuahua. And then once you beat the chihuahua, you learn that apparently you are the chosen one being foretold by the cult, the cat cult or some crap, to save the dimension from the what the fuck ever. And next thing you know, the starting screen becomes five more stages that you can choose to go to at will, and each one has like 10 stages in them. And they shuffle the levels, so you don't always have to do the same order of stages to get through them. And at the end of those is bosses, too, to hopefully unlock or rescue one of the guardians of this, wherever the fuck you are. You will die a lot. And if you run out of lives, you get kicked out and you sent back to the hub. However, the way you get more lives in this game is through scoring. Every time you get through a stage, the game will give you a series of bonus points for various goals. The only one I could even possibly understand because of how fast they fly by was Flawless Run, which I guess means getting through a stage without dying. But you'll get points for all these different things. And for every different set of points that gets you over a point threshold that the game pre-establishes, you'll get an extra life. For each extra life, it takes more points to get the next extra life, kind of like old classic like arcade games like Ms. Pac-Man and stuff. So early on, you'll get shot up with lives. You'll get just bam, 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 a lot of lives. And then eventually, they're going to be much more sparse and rare, and you're going to wish you were getting them because, again, you're going to die a lot. But it's fun. It's really freaking bizarre. The soundtrack's not going to have you bumping it, but it sure is going to make you feel uneasy while you play, which I think is the intended goal. It ranges from like weird, like demon doom and gloom to like static bubblegum. Like it's all over the fucking place, and I'm swearing intentionally. I think they understand. They program this game. They expect swearing. They do.
They've got to expect that this game is fucked up when they make a game this fucked up.
100% fucked up. But despite all that, or rather, not despite all that, because of all that, though, I wish the seizure thing wasn't as strong, I still feel like I could give it a recommended buy. Like, again, you just have to go into it knowing that it's irritating stick with weirdness attached to it. But if you're okay with that concept, and just in case it wasn't made clear when I described the game, irritating stick is basically guiding an object through a series of corridors and lines without touching the sides. Operation! That's pretty much the game. If you're okay with that, with this ass-backwards crazy coat of paint over top of it, then I think you'll have a lot to love here. It's a good time.
Well, then $12, what is your official verdict?
I'd give it a buy. It's worth your money and your time. Just again, just got to state it again. If you have any inclination of seizures, please don't buy this game. I don't want to learn that I'm responsible for somebody getting hurt. Don't buy this game if you have seizures, if you're prone to those.
Yeah, definitely proceed with caution. But if you're good with the content, it's trippy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
One final game to talk about tonight. At least I think so. I don't think I'm going to be recording with Cole and Chris tomorrow, but for all I know, I might. So this might not be the last review. But if it is, it's time for SML After Dark. Yeah, buddy. SML After Dark time. Mosaic Neku Waifus 4, developed and published by Lil Hentai Games, released February 12th on Steam for $1.99. Hentai puzzle with elements of RPG and meaningful dialogue choices. Flirt with all the Neko girls. Aki, tell us about Mosaic Neku Waifus 4.
Yeah, I need my kitty titties. So your it's kitty titties.
Lionel kitty titties.
Kitty titties.
I thought you'd appreciate that. again, this is another one of the mosaic puzzles. You just solve them and you get to see, you know, naked people. It's fantastic. This one, you're not fixing phones in this one. You're just solving them. So there's no extra little plot about why you're solving it. You're just solving it because you want to see hot girls naked. That's really it. Very simple and straightforward.
Sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah. After that, there is a little bit of dialogue between the character and you, and it goes by whatever your Steam handle is. So enjoy that. This time, sadly, there's only four girls. It feels like usually there's more, and it usually feels like there's more levels as well. This one seemed like it didn't have quite as much in it as usual. However, the four girls that are there are all fairly cute. This one seemed to be moving towards a leather or rubber fetish. I'm not sure which the suits are made out of, but half the girls have suits made out of one of those that are really tight. It's like, okay, so that's the fetish they were aiming for this time. All right, I can get behind that. there's dialogue after each one that you choose, and you get a choice on what you want your character to say. There's 2 to 4 choices. Usually it's 2 or 3. I think only once or twice was it 4. And depending on which choice you make, you get a specific item from them, which ranges anywhere from wet wipes to a vibrator.
Nice.
And yes. And each one of the answers you choose, you can replay the level and get another item. However many choices there are, each one is a different item. And these items give you bonuses to your special abilities that you have while you're trying to solve the puzzles, be it setting down little turrets that shoot straight in all 4 cardinal directions and try to turn some of the puzzle pieces to hopefully solve them, or a wave that just shoots down the entire screen and flips whatever percentage. And you can upgrade all these to get better numbers out of them, so they hopefully will solve more for you. There's also, as per usual, the 18 plus DLC that's completely free and adds it about doubles the amount of levels in the game, actually.
Oh, it actually adds content, like actual stages.
Yeah. With each character, you're expected to play through each puzzle 2 to 4 times to get each one of those, and each character has 4 or 5 without the 18-plus DLC, and with the 18-plus DLC, it's 3 to 5 more for each character, I think, thereabouts. There are some issues with some of the achievements and the items you get in the game currently that will hopefully be addressed. Sometimes you'll choose an option and it'll mark you off as asking 2 different or selecting 2 different dialogue choices, and will only give you 1 of the items, and you can never get the other one unless you delete your save and make that other choice first, which kind of sucks because it overall ends up giving you less items and therefore less upgrades, which is sad. I assume they'll probably fix that. The 18 plus DLC, after you install it, it doesn't quite work right. You have to do some extra stuff, which is explained by another user in their Steam stuff, so not too hard to find. It's one of the very few discussions there are currently, because it's still brand new, which will probably be fixed. I know another one of them had an issue similar to that, where you installed the 18 plus DLC and it just didn't quite work, and they fixed it at some point. So I assume they'll fix this as well. Just small things like that. All the girls move the entire time, which is nice. Makes the puzzle a little easier to solve sometimes. Other times it doesn't, because they... Like, you might... One puzzle might be like, oh, here's a 3x3 puzzle. Another one might be like, oh, here's a 5x5 puzzle. Some of them are like, okay, here's a 6x6. but these, this 2x2 square here is actually filled with like an 8x8. And there are little itty bitty ones around all these big ones, and you have to solve each one of those too. So it gets a little hard. You have to zoom in a lot, and you can.
Oh, like you weren't zooming in to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, you can take a guess where you zoom in, and you would probably be right. It's not their personality, it's their personality that you zoom into. God, that was the sleaziest thing I think I've said all month. Jesus Christ. Oh, geez.
Ernell, did you have time to dabble with this one?
I messed around with it for a little bit. I didn't get really get two out of that four, and I did like five puzzles for two of the girls. It's honestly, what do you mean for shame? I didn't have much time with it.
Yeah, he just got it today. So,
oh, how long ago?
Like this afternoon, like
literally.
I beat in a little over an hour.
Well, I mean, it wasn't just I got the code and used it. I was still at work, and I had to go home, make dinner, go to the gym, come home.
It would have been fine.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of firing never hurt nobody.
Who likes terminations? But, like, honestly, unless I was missing an element to the game, it actually seems fairly relaxing. Like, I didn't notice any sort of a timer.
Super relaxing game.
I even question if the skills would even become a thing I'd actually want to need to use, because due to the lack of a timer, I'm just going to solve the puzzles. Like, just turn the boxes, like, get
it. Some of the achievements, if you're going for achievements in these, and these all have very simple achievements. They're like, oh, solve this many, which require you, not puzzles, like the whole thing, but like pieces of the puzzle. So you get this piece in the right location. Well, there you go. That's one out of however many you need, and there's varying achievements for stuff like that. There's other ones for beating X amount of each one of the girls' puzzles. There's one for getting X amount of items, but there's also ones for using specific abilities to help you during your puzzles. And honestly, some of those abilities make it move so fast, especially later on when they're like, oh, here's like 100-ish pieces that you have to solve, and they're all over the place, and it's cut into four different sections that you also have to figure out where it belongs to, which makes it kind of difficult. The abilities really become fairly helpful at that point, because they'll solve a whole bunch of that, and you're like, okay, this needs to be rotated that way so it matches with the other chunks of this puzzle, and so on and so forth. So they do become useful later on, but only just. I enjoy them just because it can switch a puzzle from taking like an hour to solve to like a couple minutes.
Oh, I can appreciate that. They're good time savers.
Oh, yes, very much so. Especially if you start upgrading them and pick specific ones that are really good at it. Because there's a few that are like, oh, this is used manually, so you have to click it after you. Because for all of these, you have to solve a certain amount of the pieces yourself before you can, the ability activates automatically or manually. The manual ones all kind of suck, because you have to activate them manually. The automatic ones are where it's at, because some of those are like a wave where it just sends an entire thing down, and it solves like 20-something percent of them each time you do it. And you can just keep raising that over and over and over. I think right now my wave is like at 46% of them it solves when it goes down of all the unsolved ones. Yeah. And it goes, and I only have to solve like 8 or 9 to reload it. So it uses it again. And it's automatic. So it's like, I just solve things fucking fast. Like, yes, there we go. That's what I'm talking about. Next dialogue choice.
Like, get me to the photos, damn it.
Well, for me, it was mostly. Yeah, for me, it was mostly I wanted all the items. So I was like, okay, I just wanted to solve this real quick because I've already seen this picture, this naked picture. So I just want to get to the dialogue choice so I can get the item, so I can get an extra boost to my abilities. So saying I can do this again.
You play this for the dialogue choices is like saying you read Hustler for the articles.
You know, back when I was a teenager, I found my stepdad's Hustlers and I did read them for the articles.
Now, Playboy, I read for the articles. Hustler, you're not buying a Hustler for articles.
Hustler, I refuse to pay for my porn. I have what's called the internet. I don't have to pay for that shit.
Well, people have to pay for Mosaic Neku Waifus 4, so for $1.99, what do you think?
Oh, hell yeah. This is a good waste of a few hours. It's great. Especially if you like kitty titty.
Kitty titties.
Meow, meow, meow.
Meow. All right, well, that's it for this episode. Made it through another one without Cole, so it was less squeaky this time. No Chris, so there was less good pastor talk.
He is also
perfectly fine with that.
It was not tonight. Was not a unique experience. We'll just say that.
That's the sad part. It was a unique experience.
It was. It really was
a unique experience.
Yeah, I talked about kitty titty.
Kitty titty.
Very unique.
I guess that's good for final words, though, huh? Kitty titties?
Yes. Yeah, if you had asked me, that's what I was going to say.
No, then so, yep. Give us the final words, Aki.
Kitty titties.
Meow, 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 meow.